Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Badicher, and I'm here to talk to you today about tree and shrub fruit culture for the Wyoming area. And with that, I think we'll go ahead and get started with our talk. If you're going to plant an orchard, it is really important to start a year ahead in advance, and we want to use pathogen-free, certified disease-free stock. The other thing that I like to do is I use dwarfing rootstock because I'm vertically challenged, and I like to work a tree and be able to get up into its canopy. So that is very important to think about how we're going to ultimately work this crop. When I do plan an orchard, I have to plan the days to harvest, and that is a very important concept for orchard management or any fruit production, in that if I pick a plant that is longer than the days to harvest that I have as a growing season, frost problems do come on. Our late spring frosts are our biggest problem with standardized fruit production. And so therefore, I would suggest that you want to have a plant that is going to break its dormancy a little bit later versus one that's going to break very early in the spring. Conversely, I do not want a plant that is long days to harvest, that is, when it becomes a plant from the flowering stage to when it produces fruit. I need to find something that's going to produce within 70 to 80 days in this part of the world. If I'm in an area where I have longer time between frost to frost, such as 130 days, then I could be looking at some of the Mutsus or the Granny Smiths. But for our purposes, we're going to look at plants that have a small days to harvest, as well as a cold hardiness. We want to have plants that are cold hardy down to at least 20 below. And so when we select those cultivars, that is important. I like high tunnels, and I was really excited to see so much high tunnel up here because it does offer folks in Wyoming a huge amount of assets that you could put high tunnels. I've seen them on railroad ties. You anchor them on the railroad ties and you move your high tunnel down that field as you crop that out. So you could stagger your cropping out. For example, if I wanted arnica, now I'm not going to be doing field arnica, but that's a problem that was a disconnect for the prior speaker. So if I had a field production where I could put it in, get 10 days out, move my high tunnel down, force it down into production, I can increase my productivity by thinking outside of the box. High tunnels, it is a wind tunnel experiment. I currently live on Long's Peak. Does anybody know where Long's Peak is? In Rocky Mountain National Park, I live at 10,000 foot. So I live in a wind tunnel experiment. 120 mile an hour winds are not unusual. Now, with that being said, I lived at the base of that canyon with a greenhouse in production for 18 years. You better believe I anchored it down every which way. My west wall was a solid wall. It was not an open wall. I actually went ahead and put in rigid walls for production. I can also intercrop. I can intercrop with other high-value crops to bring on my budget. Diversification is the key. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket unless you're the guy from this morning. Now, obviously, here's a high tunnel with a roll-up band. This is Minnesota. Now, products coming out of Minnesota, cultivars, you should be looking at the northern tier in terms of your land-grant universities, checking out what cultivars are coming on that are going to handle the cold problems that we have here. Now, that being said, I can bring in Minnesota stock and I have a wind desiccation injury. So you will have to manipulate the plant material that you're coming in with and seeing if wind desiccation is not more of a problem or more of a hurdle for you than cold hardiness. So more research will have to be done. Dr. Karen Panter over at University of Wyoming, she's doing some really nice work. I think you should be looking at your local experts. So do we have well-drained loam? Anybody have well-dating lawn? Because if you do, we're going to take you out and whoop you in the parking lot. Because that, you know, this is the optimal, this is textbook. And if I brought in my soils from my farm, I am a geek. I collected my soil at the beginning of my cropping, and then every 5 years I kept samples of that soil, and over 20 years it became a rich soil. This is geologic time if you're a farmer. 20 years, we don't have a lot of time. That's a generational thing. So if we can increase our composting, reuse what we have, reduce what we're putting in the landfills, we will have a better crop. Also, we don't really have a problem right here with light, other than perhaps too much light intensity. So I would suggest to you a shade structure for some of your cropping. What I did in hygiene, that's where my farm was. It was a clean place. Hygienic Sanatorium is for TB is why the name stuck. But it's in the Boulder, Longmont, Lyons. It's a Bermuda Triangle of agriculture there. But it was a wonderful place. We felt we had too much light. So I built a shade structure where I took, because I could not build a permanent structure being Boulder County, I put 4x4 posts inside a 5-gallon bucket of cement, dropped those buckets of cement into the ground, put them on an 8-foot grid, put the shade cloth right over it, 50% shade, and I could put out a 32-foot by 32-foot grid of shade at 50% shade structure, and I could grow things like bleeding hearts and things that I could not grow anywhere else. And this is when I was doing herb production. We were doing 3.5 tons a year on 2 acres. So that was in the 80s. I went back to school in the 90s. So light intensity was already something that I was dealing with back then. I would suggest that you look at some of more of your shade cloths. They can run in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% shade cloth. Then I would think that you would want to look at resources. There's tons of resources. This is a book if you're into wine production or if you're into any type of fruit growing production that you can download free off the internet. It's a PDF file. It's updated. And you can go to your land grant universities. Go to eextension.org. You can type in. There's a lot of fruit cropping information. Specialty crop groups out there, specialty cut flower groups, and there are backyard fruit growers associations that I would urge you to get involved in. So some of the limitations we have with fruit crops are wildlife. I would suggest to you that it is not a failure of the crop, okay? It may be a limiting thing to us, but for example, where I live right now, I don't crop a lot of things because I have bears. And I, you know, once the bears get done, the moose and the elk come in. So about the only thing I've been able to crop successfully up there is choke cherries and rhubarb. And that's okay. I left some of the physicalness of not being able to farm behind. If I'm going to prune, I need to understand why I prune. I need to develop the canopy. I also need to respect what that plant is going to produce eventually. We do that well in agriculture, but we often don't look at the plant as bearing that structure of the fruit. So we want to have branches that are close to the 90, not to the 45. If you can climb a fruit tree, and that's what my great-grandfather taught to me when he was in his 80s. He was born a year after the Civil War. Think about that. He taught me how to do fruit trees in the 50s. He said, if you can climb a tree, it is a good fruit tree. And I have to go back and agree with Nick's Nuts. And that's Pennsylvania Dutch for no good. But he really did have some very good fundamental values and understanding how plants grew. Not all trees are going to grow the same way. We have to respect whether they're going to grow straight up to the sky or are they going to grow broad and ovate. So we'll have to work that plant differently. And so with each fruit crop, you're going to pick up a book. And this is the Godfather of fruit crops. Every fruit crop person would have to take it. It's Fruit Science by Norm Childers. He's still alive. It is about production fruit. And this is what folks like on the Western Slope, they would all have to take this. Norm Childers, Modern Fruit Science. There are many, many other resources out there, but Norm would say, okay, this apple has to be in a modified centiliter or an open vase. So understanding the different types of pruning are going to become essential for good production. Remember, these plants have to bear a lot of weight at one point of the year. So this is what 20-year-old standards will look like, and those are going to be big apples, and you can see you would want to climb through that, wouldn't you, if you're a kid? You've got to think about being the kid again. So now, I told you one of the biggest problems with growing fruits would be that we have late season frosts. What if I only told you you only had to have 5% to get a good crop out? You wouldn't be so worried about that late season frost because it actually helps you. It reduces your fruit set so that you actually get larger, more palatable fruit. If you don't have that frost, God help you, because you have to go out there and physically thin it. Or you could use old products such as 7, which are no longer labeled for fruit thinning. It's still legal, but it will thin fruit set. But you have a toxicology that will kill all your bees in your orchard at that same time, so you don't necessarily want to do that. So I would suggest to you the fact that you are in Wyoming, that is not a problem for you to have a late season frost. Now 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, that might be an issue. But if you can do a north-facing slope, you've already moderated when that bud break is going to occur. So we're going to drop into a few different fruits. You'll see it in catalogs, Malus pumila or Malus domestica. The only fruits I've put in here are the ones that I believe will work for this area. We're going to call on Jeff in a little bit, and he's going to give us some information on what he's growing. Again, I'm going to need 2 apples with this type of product. They cross-pollinate in order to get fruit set. So if I don't have room, or if I don't want to put a lot in infrastructure into my my farm, perhaps this is not the crop for you. These are some of my dad's apples that did not get thin. Now, all apples are cloned. We don't plant an apple seed. Johnny Appleseed grew up in Franklin, Pennsylvania, where I was born, actually. Lots and lots of apple trees. What I find are the shorter days to harvest. If we're going to go over into the Fujis, the Mutsus, then we're looking at many, many more days than you have growing time period. You could grow them in a high tunnel where you move it back and forth, but I'm not sure that your cost would be recovered. Yeah, the question is, could I use the secondary ones as cross-pollinators? And thank you, Rita, for taking me right into this. Oh, there I go. This is not meant for you to try to even read. But what it is the fact that some apples will pollinate others, and others will never pollinate some. So again, reading our reference materials and understanding what we are purchasing will set us up for success. I like it, Rita, when you can do that sort of thing. So we're gonna leave. Yes.
How do you feel about the columnar apple varieties?
The question is about columnar apple varieties. If I am doing a columnar production, for example, if I'm going to take a crop, does everybody know a columnar? Okay, you can take apples or any fruit tree. Put them 18 inches on center, similar to like a wine cropping. Lay them onto a trellis system and go ahead and just go ahead and crop them out that way. They're a very fastidious, very tight, narrow plant, and so we take advantage of that those genetics. They can be very good, but I would suggest that you make sure you have days to harvest within your with whatever you're picking. Western Slope has been certainly using columnar. Western Slope of Colorado has been using columnar production. I would say since 93 or 94 when I first saw it over there. So something certainly to look at. And you get more trees per acre, obviously. I threw in quince in here because this is a old plant. I don't think that people are utilizing enough of quince. It's generally been used in fruit production for dwarfing rootstock of pears, believe it or not. They take two plants and make one. But I do think that this is a plant that if you could get a value-added product out of it, it has attributes. It's an easy-to-grow plant. It blooms on second-year wood. It fruits on second-year wood. So if you don't prune that out, if you could figure out a value-add, I think that this has potential for production in Wyoming. High production, particularly if you're working with some of the alternative medicine folks. They might be interested in this one. It's utilized more in Europe. One of the things is if you buy one that's grafted, like you have one rootstock and you have a top stock that is telling you that, oh, I'm going to create a different color or a different size fruit, it often shears at that point. It's a graft incompatibility. And so I would suggest that you just buy your true to stock and not try to go for the grafted cultivars at this point in time. And then also fire blight resistance. If we're looking at fruit crop production, we are limited with our pesticides. We don't have a lot of labeled pesticides, so we need to use integrated pest management. And really sustainably, when we throw something out of whack by utilizing pesticides, do we not throw a lot of other things that we don't know out of whack? So if we could get more to a sustainable inputs in, we're going to get more sustainability out of it. So I would suggest that use fire blight resistance, use integrated pest management, the tools that we have. With cherries, anybody growing cherries? Couple, good. Are you growing tart cherries or sweets?
Tart.
Tart, yeah. Okay, yeah, with cherries, you plant two trees, not because they need to pollinate, but you plant one for the birds, one for you. Okay? You net one and you don't net the other, all right? Because the birds will find the cherries. But tart cherries do work well. I like using a very small plant and then I train it up. I like placing my lowest branch. If you take nothing else from this whole day, whenever planting a tree, plant your lowest branch to the southwest side to prevent sun scald from winter desiccation. You don't have to do as much wrapping. You'll have less winter injury. Okay, so sweet cherries, we already talked about hardiness problems with some of the apples. Sweet cherries would be the same, but tart cherries, certainly a highly successful crop. The reason I put Larimer County in is not because I'm stuck on Colorado, but it has implications for you in Colorado. What has happened since 1950s to now in terms of USDA zone mapping? Is it the same hardiness zone as Larimer County was in 50s as it is now? No, it's gone up a zone and a half. A zone and a half. So that means that tart cherries production could be pushed straight up here. If you think about it, the reason that it went out in 51, it had a double whammy. 1951, 40 below zero for extended period of time, which will equal plant death. And number two, it was post-World War II. Larimer County lost their workforce of the cherry crop after the war through the GI Bill, and they started taking the cherry trees out. When I got there in the 70s, there was still cherry production, and you still could go there and get 5-gallon buckets of cherries, just or pick your own, and now they're all gone. It's into subdevelopment. So I would suggest to you that sour cherry production along, at least along the Front Range, farther north, if you've got water, you should be thinking of that. There are several cultivars. I end up going with Montmorency because it has an even pit. If you've ever pitted a cherry, Meteor has an odd pit and it won't go through the pitter, and North Star varies, and so you end up losing more flesh. But all of them are very good tart cherry plants. Anybody working with other cultivars? Nice thing about cherries, like we talked about, you only need one, but you plant two, one for the birds. Now, avoid compaction. This means I walk on near that plant three times in a season. I walk up to it to net it. Well, pruning, netting, and harvesting. I don't try to walk on that root structure. I really respect it. This is one plant I can put a lot of pests on it because I'm compacting the soil. And it's also a heavy feeder. So if I can use some, I like the gentleman with the hogs this morning. You can tell I'm a horticulturist, can't you? Can you not? Okay, I'm a plant person. I just want to have those little hogs come in and then help me do that nitrification there. I just think that closing that cycle would just be wonderful. So we're clipping right through. I should try to collect all the crops that you could grow up here. Well, that's a whole semester. Native plums, anybody growing native plums? Prunus, okay, you like those? Are they just kind of a pain? You put them in your windbreak, don't you? Yeah, they're kind of in your... Kind of is, kind of not, okay. Okay, how about it? Over here? I saw another hand. They've always sort of been there, and they just produce, and it's a big seed and hardly any food. And the bugs get them every time. Okay. Great jelly. So are you hearing some attributes and some problems with this plant? The native plum will do well here. So if you can also figure out how to bring it on, I would suggest if you could give it some more water in the winter, you would have less pest pressure the following summer. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of my winter watering strategies. This is not going to be popular up here. This will not be popular. But in order to grow good fruit crops, if I do not have adequate snow cover, I need to be out there dragging hose in some manner. I don't care if you are putting on the back in a tank and you're on your ATV or something like that. But you need to deliver water to those plants. Those plants are respirating throughout the winter. Photosynthesis decreases. Photosynthesis does occur like in the stem tissue, the twigs. That still occurs to a certain level. But desiccation and respiration occurs every day. And we're asking a lot of these plants. And so in order to be successful, that winter watering becomes critical. We skip 1 week, it becomes 4 weeks. 4 weeks becomes 5 weeks, 6 weeks. We've skipped a whole watering cycle. And that can compromise our fruit quality set that following year by 50% by research, by loss of one water cycle. So I would suggest that becomes something that you do have to program in. Prunus domestica is the plum that I would suggest up here. Anybody growing oriental plums with success for production? The prune plums, the domestica, the European prune plums, generally are going to do better for you. You may know it as a Stanley plum. That is one of the known ones, that a purple plum that you see. It's long egg shape. The rounded shape, those are orientals, like what we get the San Jose's. And so that kind of gives you an idea of where they do really well. So we're not going to stick with, we're not going to go with Japanese oriental plums. So we have to thin this crop again. So again, a late season frost is not going to kill us. We notice we actually prune it a little bit differently than we do some of the other crops. And this is the only crop I can tell you that if you eat it and you like it, you can plant that seed and it may come up true to form. If I plant an apple seed, no. It may be a feel good, it could be a crab apple, but it will never be the quality. A peach seed, an apricot, not going to happen. But a plum, you will get the same thing. Now, we can place them in sheltered areas. Do we have sheltered areas? So we may have to do windbreaks. And some of our windbreaks could actually be doing the prunus, the native plums. Or they could be doing choke cherries or other fruit production. All right, so we're going to... Now, there are some plants that I think are going to have minimal hardiness. Anybody growing cots, apricots, peaches with success? One out of every 10 years or 5 years, you're getting a crop?
About every 5 years.
Yeah, okay, there you go. One out of every 5 years. That's not bad. So you enjoy it on those years. But to put all of your eggs in that one basket, don't do that. Never invest more than you can afford to lose. Anybody doing kiwi? Hardy kiwi. Okay, that's one I often would get questions on. Brambles. We're going to get into brambles because I know Jeff has some things to share with us. And we've already touched on the desiccation. So we're going to go into a few other plants that I think would have very, very good. Prunus virginiana, we had it in the last lecture. Native shrub, hard to pick. Myself, these three people, my husband, another guy, we picked 35 gallons of choke cherries in a day off of three bushes. Now, that's a lot of picking. But if I told you 35 gallons of berries would yield 10 gallons of juice on average, and 10 gallons of juice could then yield 20 gallons of jelly, and I heard this morning 75 cents an ounce. So you do the math off of three plants. You start doing the math. You're going to start seeing some of that coming in. Now, if you could do a cooperative where you share harvesting equipment, processed equipment, juicing equipment, your costs are going to go down. So the reason I have this in is I've been the Jelly Hunt chair of Allen's Park for 2 years. Now, who would think that I would grow up to be that? But I did. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but if I told you that the choke cherries that we glean from the canyons... We do not grow it. We glean from the canyons of the South St. Vrain. We then put it into jams and jellies, and we pay for Flight for Life, scholarships, fire department, AED devices for our department, just from the choke cherries that are not being harvested. Okay? Now, it's not all in 1 year we make that kind of money, but we are talking $10,000. With five people and picking for a day. Okay, so this is not a plant that has been used well for production yet. It's salt tolerant, it's drought tolerant, it likes nasty soils. Am I selling this plant to you? You bet. I think you should be growing it. Put it along your ditches, your riparian corridors. Where you have high pHs, you can go ahead and pH down your water. You can go ahead and fertigate by injecting some acids into your water, bring it down. There's no reason why you guys can't be in blueberry production if you really want to. It's a matter of pH and ECs and moderating your salts, bringing in your organic matter, and manipulating your grow environment. So yes, you should. pH will limit the amount of choke cherries. If you're getting up in the eights, then you're limiting a lot of plant growth. This book here I wrote back in the early 90s, Growing Small Fruit for the High Plains and Rocky Mountain West, might be of interest. It's still sold by CSU Colorado State. And I really like this book, Edible Native Plants of the Rocky Mountains. There's a whole series of edible plants, but this one is done by Harrington, H.D. Harrington. So these will be up here for your reference. Ribes. I really like ribes. I think we could grow a lot more of the currants, gooseberries, and yosteberries. They are a nice woody shrub. Most are self-fruitful, which means I only need one. But of course, if I'm in production, I'm going to have more than one, right? So I can get a pretty good crop. Again, it's an intensive picking crop. So if I can either get grounded teenagers or whatever, I'll be better off. One of my jokes was, and by the way, my son did go into horticulture, so the family farm was not lost. But one of his jokes was that he either had to go out and pick the currants or move the compost pile 3 inches to the left. I got a clip up. There we go. All right, there's lots of gooseberry cultivars to consider. Even without even thinking about what color do you think that this might be? Okay, how about this one? How about this one though? So you can have a variety of fruits on your farm to offer to the clients just within the zone of what you could grow. But if I then told you that Hinamaki yellow tastes lightly like apricots, and Hinamaki red tastes more like cherry, you might be even more enticed to try some of these. So there's a lot of different things out there. Don't overlook it. Yosteberry is a yosteberry is a yosteberry. They'll tell you that they're different cultivars, but genetically they are the same. Now, ribes love pH of 6.2 to 6.5. Do we have that? Heck no. That's just a limiting factor. I've grown them as high as 8 and had fruit set. I'll just have reduced fruit set unless I can get some of that to pH to go down. Okay? I also don't want to get too acidic. They just won't produce. I don't think we have to worry about that. This is a plant that breaks all of the rules in horticulture in that I tell you to plant it 2 inches lower than it was previously grown. Because it sends out suckering side shoots right underneath that soil root interface, and you'll actually get a better plant and a longer lived plant in the environment if you plant it deeper than it was grown at the nursery. That is probably the biggest trick about growing gooseberries, yosteberries, and currants. Now we're going to flip on to Sambucus canadensis, or elderberry. Anybody growing elderberry? Elderberry wine, elderberry jam, elderberry pies. Nobody ever growing elderberry. What? So are you growing it for the flowers?
Flowers and berries.
Okay, good. Flowers and berries?
Berries.
Okay, the berries. Yeah, the flowers are edible, but the stem tissue on it is highly poisonous, so you want to de-stem that, but otherwise it's a very good product. You just don't want to crush the entire berry cluster. You have to actually get those berries off that green stem tissue. Certainly, if nothing else, the birds love it. It's a good wildlife attractant, which may or may not be what you want with fruit crops. So, and again, here we would get rid of all of the stem tissue to make sure that, because there are alkaloids in that stem tissue that are stronger than what we find in the berries or in the flowers. This is one we don't rototill at all around. And it will be, you'll have a better fruit selection if you have two cultivars. It is somewhat self-fruitful, but a better fruit set will occur if I have two cultivars. So I have several cultivars. Now look at those names. What does that say to you? East Coast. Not a lot of research has been done in the West on elderberry production. It's a shame because this is a good plant. It has good potential for production. Again, we're looking at plants in terms of diversifying your farms so that you can go in and crop something and still maintain the rest of the farm, everything else that you've been doing well. So, yeah, these are East Coast names, but these are also the very best ones. Some of them have more of what we call an astringent taste. I don't know if I like that, unless I'm trying to make something like a herb tincture or something like that. Scotia is a very good plant. If you can get anything from Nova Scotia that's being developed, we're finding a lot of the genetics are coming out of here that seem to grow out pretty good in the West. But John Adams, by the way, actually was really into elderberries. So hence, that's why so many was named after him. Amelanchier alnifolia, serviceberry, sarvisberry, shadrow. You know, I think there's like 20 different names for this one. And this is another plant that could be more put into production if you can get the fruit away from the birds. You may, again, have to net this plant. It's grown for even nothing else, just the summer, the winter, I'll say it correctly yet, the fall foliage, and then the spring and flowers, and then, of course, the fruit set. This is a tricky one because if you have livestock, it's terribly poisonous to livestock, so you probably have already rogued these out of your area. But if you can make sure that your livestock will not get to it, Amelanchier is a very good plant. There are different cultivars available, but most likely you will not be able to find them. Yes, ma'am. Okay, the question has to do with pollination, wind, or bee, or other pollinators. It's not always just bees that pollinate, but there's other visitors that may be coming and say surfeit flies that just kind of bumble around. They're actually insects that harm other insects, but nonetheless they will pollinate. So wind definitely is a pollinator, bees are a pollinator, but I would suggest that you have other pollination. You can also bring in solitary bees and bee if you're having bee issues. Are you having a lot of bee issues up here yet with the colony collapse disorder? think that's more East Coast I'm seeing it. My folks have bees where they actually have like a little box that they put out in their orchard block. My dad is 80. He has 35 kinds of apples now. I'm really kind of trying to convince him not to plant more this year. Please, Dad, don't plant more. Now, I want to go over a couple of tools. A wine refractometer. This is a digital scale. It's a Brix meter or Brix meter that you've heard about. You can also use the old standard Brix meter where you put the solution on and you use good old sunlight to make it work. You should also be thinking about having a pH meter or an EC meter if you're having worries about your water coming out, your water quality. You can get a domestic water quality testing through various and sundry departments, say Extension or your university. But understanding that your water is probably going to vary and you need to adjust your water accordingly. If you've got heavy salty water or heavy nitrate load, decrease your nitrate load that you put back out onto these plants. Some of these plants cannot handle that nitrogen. This would be an example. If I was growing Shepherdia rotundifolia or buffalo berry, this is not in production, but this has potential. This is a plant that has a slight appley taste. And it is good if we can get it into production. There'll be post-harvest handling, but there's no reason why we shouldn't be growing it up here. All right, now we're jumping into the small fruits. Okay. I'm going to suggest that mainly going to fall-bearing red raspberry production like we heard earlier today might be the appropriate thing for raspberries. However, Jeff, you do biennial bearing?
No, they're all fruit cane. They're all fall-bearing.
Okay, all right. Okay, so we are on the same track. The way I grow raspberries is there are different types of raspberry production. You do not want the type that go into biennial production. Those, you need to keep those canes up and alive throughout that second winter. They shoot up the first year, and they are only vegetative, and then that second year they become floriferous. If I go with fall-bearing red raspberries, and those could be yellow raspberries, by the way, it's just a color break, then I can mow down that crop and decrease my pests right away. I decrease my desiccation. And so if I crop it and just mow it down in the fall to a 6-inch height, I can catch in enough moisture often and decrease some of that. Decrease some of the water loss and decrease some of the pest loss. The other thought is to leave the canes up until March prior to growth to collect as much moisture as possible. So it's up to you, but you want to get those canes out at the end of the growing season prior to the new leaf set. Again, it depends on where you are in your wind tunnel experiment. Yeah.
Breeding, was that different species? Was it selection?
Primocaine. Primocaine. Let me go back. I glossed over. Primocaine is from Rubus occidentalis neglectus. This is a very promiscuous little lot. Okay, they freely breed amongst themselves. I heard somebody talking about blackberries and that type of thing. You'll want to keep them a quarter mile away from each other because they will breed. You'll get a subspecies right out of that. But these you'll have to keep up those canes up over 1 year in order to get any fruit production that second year. They only produce on second year wood. Versus a fall-bearing red raspberry, will produce on that same cane. It will produce the second year if you leave that cane up, but then at the second year, that floor cane is done. It's ceased production. Okay? And I'm going to clip along. Jeff, can you tell us a couple other cultivars?
The ones that I have are Himbo Top,
Joan Jay.
Alana. And Caroline.
And as you can see, I have other ones. Heritage is the one that you'll see in the catalogs. Everything is marked from the days to a week ahead of Heritage or 10 days after Heritage. If you don't know when Heritage comes in, that kind of is tough to read those catalogs, but it comes in about this time. So you'll want to stagger your types of crops. Now, if you can get clean stock, Trailblazer and Pathfinder were developed here in Cheyenne, for God's sakes. Can I think of anything better than to give back to you Trailblazer and Pathfinder? They are superior to Heritage. They need to be cleaned up. Most of them have virus in them because they've just been shared by backyard gardeners for years upon years. But it could be cleaned up, put in production, and you would have a higher yield than anything else I can offer you.
Just as a question, go back on that, because I've reached the lake from, even though they are basically biannual, and found it very winter.
Oh, Latham and Boyd are very winter hardy here. It's just a matter of you have to take care of those canes.
Right.
And the winter desiccation and putting mats around all those plants and watering them, you never did. Okay, there you go. I always love fruit crops because we all have different successes.
I mean, I've raised some of the others too, the ways we're growing are different.
And the only reason I have those down is because they're biennial and they're often found. But if you want to go through that labor, go ahead for it. All right, strawberries. We have early, mid, and late season. I would suggest that you stick with June bears. And within the June bears, you look at an early, mid, and late. So you have a staggered period of 6 weeks of cropping versus 10 days of cropping. So you can buy one-third of them, bringing them on early if you've got to pick your own, a mid and a late season cultivar. So look at your magazines. They have a photoperiod response, and they so if you look at a day neutral or an everbearer, they can crop more than one time. But there's desiccation injuries that occur more with the everbearers or the day neutrals that we have found on research that the other are better. We want to also make sure we do not plant after a solanaceous crop or other bramble crops. And solanaceous would be some things like eggplants, potatoes, tomatoes, any of those. Because we could get verticillium wilt, and that's a 7-year problem for us in this crop. Now, we utilize different types of methodologies. But irrigation is going to be something that is a big issue, getting that crop in. We've talked a little bit about row covers, season extenders, high tunnels. These are all valid with a strawberry or a fruit production where you've got a high value crop. And honey eye or honey eye, depending on how you pronounce it, or honai, who knows? I don't know why they call it that. That's kind of the bear like heritages for raspberries. Honai is what you pick up in that big D plastic bin at the supermarket, that big pithy thing. Okay. So much for the unbiased opinion. But there are many, many cultivars that could grow here, and I lay you a bet if we ask, Jeff, you could tell us a couple more.
My experience with honey eye is that it's not pithy.
It's not, okay, honey eye is not pithy when grown locally under good cultivation, but in California in field production, that's what you get.
A couple other varieties that we've been playing around with. There's one that's from Nova Scotia. It's called DC Valley Sunset. Cabot, Clancy, Jewel, Darselect, and Lamour.
So you're going to all see Jeff afterwards about getting different cultivars that can grow here specifically. And understand that these cultivars, there's no set rules. Part of it is the art and science of growing things. And I'm going to keep you on time with Vitas. You know, I understand you're having a vineyard tour. I have to get back on the road. Because it was 40 degrees yesterday at my house, and that means the snow is coming this week. Yeah, think about that. But Vitas, I did not have a clue as to what you are growing over here. I'm more familiar with Western Slope growers. You would want to make sure you do proper site selection on this. I think you have potential for, say, doing some of the dry Rieslings. Certainly, the lake varietals would do well here. And when I say lake varietals, you'll know them as Interlock and Hemrod, Geneva, out of the New York Research Center. Those have very, very good hardiness. Those tend to be sweeter, more of the Mogan David type of wine, so you're going to have to find a value add for that. It's not going to be the Chardonnay grapes. It will not, you cannot grow Vitis vinifera here. It's just too harsh. You'll have to have a grafted rootstock. So, with different cultivars to think about, again, you could do a Riesling, but the Golden Muscats, the Vanessas, definitely some chances of growing some different grapes up here, offering them on. Whether you put them into a wine situation or perhaps another value-added product, that's up to you. So with that, keep it light, start small, enjoy what you're doing, and remember, horticulture is an art and a science. There are no hard sets, fast rules, other than following good cultural management and understanding that when we try different plants, it's okay to fail occasionally. If we look at baseball players, what is a good average? 300? Okay. I get upset if I lose one plant out of 10. That's a 900. So we ask a lot of our plants to do things that perhaps are beyond their limits, but if we don't ask them, we will never know. So I encourage you to go out and experiment, feed it back to your researchers, and enjoy. Thank you.
Does anybody have questions in a couple of minutes?
Plant raspberries.
Why can we not transplant raspberries and just not take off? Well, let's talk about raspberry production a little bit more. Raspberry production, if I'm going to have peak production, I'm going to be delivering an inch and a half of moisture during fruiting and all of the flowering sequence. Are you applying an inch and a half to your field per week? Okay. So that, are you doing winter watering? Okay. That is why they're probably not taking off. The water, this is a high water plant. This is almost akin to, this is not a xeric plant. So you're going to have to deliver water either through drip irrigation or through furrow or something to get it out in the winter as well as in the summer. Other question? Up to an inch and a half a week during flowering and fruiting on brambles. In winter, I generally go out, and if I can get a segment of my field done in 30 minutes with what I can deliver, I feel like I'm pretty good. So, you know, I just don't want it to desiccate. I don't want that soil profile to really get so crumbly and friable that it becomes powder. So I want to keep that root mass somewhat moist, but I don't want soppy. The ground's not always frozen. I'm talking about when there's no snow on the ground, the wind's been blowing, it's dry, it's time to drag hose. And I mark an X on my calendar every 3 weeks, and if there's adequate snow on the ground at that point in time, I do not drag hose. So, and it can be very exhausting, but I had 2 acres under production. Thank you all.